Up next, we have our book reading program, Ohomani Iyotaka, read by Gail Hubling.
The Long Knives Are Crying, a novel by Joseph M. Marshall III, Chapter 14, The Heart of a Bear. The village was still buzzing with the excitement over the bears as the sun went down. Boys and young men gathered to watch as two tall, sturdy tripods of lodge poles were pitched and the bear carcasses were hoisted to be skinned. Crazy Horse had given the hearts to High Eagle, who went down to the river with them. Crazy Horse, the story of the way Cloud distracted the first bear, had made the rounds several times. Of the second bear, Cloud had said only that he had to shoot it twice. It had been years since anyone had killed a bear, and most of the children in the village had never seen one up close. Now they gathered to stare at the two large carcasses. High Eagle found a secluded spot by the river. After gathering kindling and dry wood, he built a small fire. At the water's edge, he washed the two bear hearts. Next, he dropped a bundle of sage into the flames, causing the sweet, pungent smoke to billow. A heart in each hand, he held them in the smoke, smudging them. Then, after laying them on a large flat stone, he picked up his knife and began to slice into the organs. Goings approached Cloud, who was standing at the back of the crowd. Both carcasses seemed larger, hanging head down from the tripods, and both were mature males. The first bear was noticeably smaller, however, and as the hide was finally peeled away, it suddenly looked pale and unimposing. Death had certainly stripped it of its dignity. Cloud felt a twinge of pity for both of the dead animals, and silently asked forgiveness for having killed them. "One of my uncles shot a bear years ago," Goings recalled. "It was in the spring. They surprised one another, and my uncle got one arrow in him, and the thing chased him. He had to climb a tree, and somehow he shot two more arrows into him. Then he had to hang on and wait for the bear to bleed to death. The thing is, you can never tell about bears. That is part of their power." Cloud felt High Eagle's presence before he heard soft footsteps approaching. In his open palm on a bed of gray sage, the medicine man held small pieces of meat. "Eat four pieces," he instructed Cloud. "You will take upon yourself the ferocity of this being." Cloud took four pieces of the bear's heart and swallowed them one at a time. "Thank you, Uncle. The hide of the second bear is yours." Cloud stayed at the back of the crowd after the medicine man left and patiently answered endless questions. He was relieved when Yellow Wolf came with his buffalo runner. "I found him in the herd," he told Cloud. "He seems unhurt." Cloud nodded. "Yes, he had the good sense to leave. Thank you." Taking the long rein, he quickly inspected the horse. The neck rope was still tied on. He took the horse to the water for a drink, but he was just as much seeking refuge from all the attention. Then, rather than picketing the horse by his lodge door, he turned him loose the herd to let him graze. He had tried to point out that Crazy Horse's deadly marksmanship had brought down the first bear. Crazy Horse, on the other hand, had successfully fashioned his story on how Cloud had stopped the first bear's charge by confronting him face to face. That only added to the mystery of how Cloud had killed the second bear. "Two bears in one day," people marveled to one another. Back in his own lodge, he settled back to enjoy a cup of tea and told his story to Sweetwater Woman and Song. After he finished, Sweetwater Woman held a braid of sweet grass over the small cooking fire, saying a silent prayer to the spirits for keeping her husband safe. A soft, almost timid scratch came at the door. Sweetwater Woman peeked out and smiled. "Come in," she said to the boy standing outside. It was Two Horns, Little Bird's youngest son. "Uncle," he said shyly to Cloud, "my father would like you and your family to come to our lodge to eat. He has something for you." The enticing aroma of roasted elk ribs greeted the visitors to the lodge of Stands on the Hill and Little Bird. Their two sons sat off to one side, smiling shyly at Song. Cloud was pleasantly surprised to see Black Shield and his wife there as well. Stands on the Hill invited them to sit near Black Shield and his wife, Looking North Woman. After they were seated on the willow chairs, she began to serve the meal. After the main course of roasted ribs and peppermint tea came choke cherry fruit soup. The adults conversed as they ate, while the children were respectfully silent unless one of the adults spoke to them. After the meal, Little Bird unrolled a long elk hide covered bundle to reveal a bow case and quiver made from the tan hide of a mountain lion. A handful of arrows were in the quiver, and the bow case contained a sinew-backed hunting bow made of chokecherry wood. Little Bird handed the encased weapon to Cloud. "It is fitting that I plan to give this to you today," he said, smiling in admiration, "this day of two bears. 4 years ago, a cat stalked me while I was hunting. I climbed a tree, but that did not stop him." He paused and glanced toward the children in the room and decided to omit the details of killing the mountain lion. "I asked Two Crow to prepare the hide for me, since there is no one better. Since then, I've kept it with the intent to make a bow case and quiver out of it, and I finally have a good reason to do that. I can never repay you for saving my life, but I can give you this bow I made with my own hands." Cloud slid the bow from its case. He had never seen one so exquisitely made. The sinew was applied evenly, covering the entire back of the bow without a single bump or blemish, and giving the weapon a slight backward curve because the sinew had shrunk as it dried. The sinew backing also added to the strength of the bow. It was longer than his other hunting bows, and the center, the handle, was wrapped with tanned otter hide with the hair side out, meaning the arrow would fly from the bow without the slightest whisper of noise to alert the game. Overall, it had a heft and a feel that Cloud's other bows did not. "The sinew on the back is from an antelope," Little Bird pointed out. "The bowstring is buffalo sinew. So your bow has the spirit of the fastest and the strongest animals known to us. I have never made one that shot a heavy hunting bow as fast as this one does." As far as Cloud knew, there was no one better at making bows than Little Bird. "There is one other strength it has," he said. "It is just as important to me, and that is the skill that went into making it." "In that case," Little Bird replied, "look at the arrows." Cloud pulled the arrows out of the case. There was only six, but each was tipped with a point made of black stone and fletched with three goose feathers. He glanced toward Black Shield. No one could ever hope to make stone points so expertly and beautifully as he did. "Grandfather," he said, "thank you. I am almost afraid to use these. They are so finely made." "But you must," the old man said. "You must use the bow and the arrows to help them fulfill the purpose they were created for. Otherwise, they will be things without a spirit, without a purpose." "Yes, you are right, Grandfather. I will use them, and each time I do, I will think of you both." Black Shield nodded, then turned toward Little Bird's sons and song. "This is a good time to tell these grandchildren how our people came to have the bow and arrow," he said. "Long, long ago," he began, "we were hunters, as we are today. In those days, the hunters used several kinds of weapons to bring down animals. One of them was a spear and spear thrower. The spear was long and slender and looked much like an arrow does today, with a sharp stone point and feathers. The spear thrower was made of heavy hardwood, as long as from the elbow to the wrist." He pointed to his own arm. "The tip of the spear thrower fit into a notch at the end of the spear, and the hunter threw the spear like so, overhand, like throwing a stone. It was a very good weapon until the bow came along. A hunter had a dream one night. No one remembers the hunter's name, but in his dream, he heard Moon speak to him and say, 'Look at me when I am young, and I will show you how to be a more powerful hunter.' So the hunter did. He looked at the new moon. Now in the moon, which has the female spirit, is new. It is very thin. If you look closely, it is a thin curve and is wider in the middle and narrows toward the ends. Each time any Lakota hunter strings his bow and bends it, it looks just like the new moon." Two Horns and Ashes nodded respectfully. "Now the moon gave us the bow because she knew the sun had given us the arrow," the old man continued. "What is it your father tells you when he makes arrows? They must be as straight as the rays of the sun," said Two Horns. "Yes," Black Shield said, his old eyes twinkling. "Then after the bow came, the spears became arrows and were shorter, the way they are today. And each time you see the sun's rays, its arrows, shining down through the clouds, you will always remember that our arrows must be as straight as that." He paused, looking at the young faces. "And do you know why we have weapons?" The boys shook their heads. "What makes deer so difficult to hunt?" the old man asked the boys. "They have good eyesight," Ashes said, "and they hear very well." "Yes, and what about the great beast that your Uncle Cloud faced on this day? What is their power?" "Their claws," Two Horns replied, "and their great strength." "Yes," Black Shield agreed. "Bears can smell at great distances as well. When I was a young man, I watched a bear sniffing the ground, and then it dug up moles. He smelled them even though they were so deep he had to poke his head in up to his shoulders. My cousin was wounded in a fight and he hid in a small cave on a hillside. He said that he watched a bear on the horizon several hills away come toward him. That animal smelled the blood from the wound in his leg. All the four-legged people have some kind of strength, a power that sets them apart from all the others. The falcon can fly faster than all the other hunters of the sky. The wolf has great endurance like no other. The great cat of the mountains not only has strength and speed, he can see well in the night, as does the owl, who sees better at night than anyone does, and he flies silently. And there is no one faster than the white-bellied goat of the prairie, the antelope. Porcupines have quills that can be just as deadly as knives, and of course, there is the skunk. At the mention of the skunk, even Song giggled. So, the old man went on, we can sit here all night and talk about what makes the winged people and four-legged people more powerful than we are, and we should not forget the crawlers. But I would like to talk about what makes us equal to them sometimes. What do you think that is? Our weapons, ventured Two Horns. And how do we get our weapons? The old man asked. We make them, the boy replied. How can we do that? Because we know how? Two Horns asked timidly. Exactly. What, then, allows us to know how? The boy was stumped and turned to his brother, who was equally at a loss. Black Shield smiled knowingly, a twinkle still playing in his old eyes. Our fang, our claw, our speed, our keen eyesight is our ability to think, to reason in our own way. He touched a forefinger to his head. It may not be the best of strengths at times, but it is our strength, such as it is. But it can also be a weakness, especially when we humans think we are better than all the other beings. When it comes down to it, we are not the stronger or the fastest of creatures, so we have to rely on our minds. He glanced slyly toward the two boys. Can you run as fast as a rabbit? Can you catch even a mouse with your bare hands? Of course not. That is why we have learned to make traps and snares. If necessary, we can make a trap that could catch a bear. But whether we are out to trap a bear or a squirrel, we have to know where to put a snare or a trap. If we did not know these things, we would be hungry and cold and frightened. We would be poor creatures indeed. Speaking of knowing things, Grandfather Cloud interjected, I wonder if you would consider helping me learn how to make stone points. It would be a shame for that particular knowledge, your knowledge, to fade away. You can include me as well, Little Bird added, and my sons, too. The old man glanced at his wife with a smile, then nodded appreciatively at Cloud and Little Bird. That is good. I would be glad to do that, he told them. There is not much black stone available anymore, but there is flint and other kind of stone, some call arrow stone. We can go looking after the first heavy rain washes away the creek beds. When that happens, it reveals the arrow stone. Morning came cool and gray. Cloud and Song walked down to the river and then upstream. Cloud wanted to shoot his new bow and arrows, but did not want to shatter the black stone points. So they walked until they found a sandbank, relatively free of large stones. In a spare quiver, he carried iron-tipped arrows. Father, Song said as she watched him string the new bow, can I have a bow and arrows too? Cloud glanced at his daughter as he hung the new quiver at the front of his waist. He was not surprised at her question, and he was pleased. At some point, he intended to teach her how to handle and use weapons as he had taught her mother. Like many men, he felt it was important for women to be able to hunt and defend themselves when necessary. In order to do that, they needed to learn the basics of weaponry. Yes, he told her, you can have your own bow and arrows. I have a few ash staves hanging below the smoke hole in our lodge. We can pick one and make a bow for you. But if you want to learn to shoot, I think it is just as important for you to know how to make a bow. Want to learn how to do that too? She nodded, a broad smile on her face and eyes bright with anticipation. At 20 paces from the bank, the first arrow was barely a flash in the air before it buried itself halfway up the shaft. The straight and unerring flight of the arrow was due primarily to the skill and experience of Black Shield, and the speed with which it flew was a direct result of the bow. The other 5 stone-tipped arrows flew every bit as fast and all embedded themselves in the sandbank in a group no larger than a man's palm. Cloud retrieved the arrows and exchanged them for the iron-tipped shafts in the other quiver. Stepping back 10 more paces, he methodically shot 8 arrows into the bank. He paused before retrieving them and ran his hand over the limbs of the bow. It was truly the work of a master craftsman. In the old days, the skill to make a beautiful and powerful bow was not taken lightly, because life and death always hung in the balance for the hunter as well as for the warrior. Although every man still could make his own these days if he had to, hardly anyone had little birds or black shield skills, and the preference for firearms and the growing dependence on them for hunting as well as for warfare diminished many skills, foremost the ability to craft an adequate weapon. Not only was Little Bird highly skilled at making bows, he was also a deadly marksman. No grown man among the Crazy Horse people was as good. That is, Cloud reminded himself, until a bullet had torn through his right shoulder in the ambush at the bluffs. But even with that, once his shoulder had completely healed, he would still be a lethal marksman. Little Bird's determination, courage, and commitment made his skills as a warrior all that much more formidable. There were more than 100 such men who followed Crazy Horse. Cloud knew that every one of those men, including him, would ride into battle with a rifle as his primary weapon, perhaps not by choice, as in his case, but certainly because of necessity. As lethal as the bow could be and was against an enemy who was similarly armed, it was inadequate against firearms. Perhaps the bow and arrow's time as a battlefield weapon was passing. The reality that had been mocking him since yesterday was that he would not have killed that bear with a bow. True, he might have been able to put at least one arrow into the beast, but that would never have stopped the animal. His wife was not a widow, and Song still had her father because of the rifle. It was a reality he was immensely grateful for, but it was a sad and foretelling reality nonetheless. If the bow and arrow were becoming things of the past, what other ancient realities of the Lakota world were being lost? A small voice tugged at his awareness. Father? Cloud glanced at Song, who was pointing off to the side. Turning, he saw Crazy Horse approaching with the horse on a lead. You look like someone with much on his mind, the man observed. Cloud held up his new bow. This, for one thing, he told his friend. Crazy Horse admired the weapon. How does it shoot? Smooth and fast. It is the best one I have ever had. Crazy Horse took the weapon and ran his hands over the limbs. Yes, he said. It has a feeling of power. Little Bird was in a good place when he made it. My father always says that the power of the bow begins with the spirit of the man who makes it. They watched as Song pulled her father's arrows out of the sandbank. Cloud took the bow and unstrung it, then slid it into its case. That is very true, he said, especially with this weapon. But that is not the only thing on your mind, Crazy Horse ventured perceptively. Cloud took his arrows from Song and put them into the arrow cup and then slid them into the quiver. I was thinking about yesterday and what could have happened. He caressed his daughter's shoulder and pulled her close. I was lucky, very lucky, all in all, if I did not have my rifle with me. I know what you mean, Crazy Horse agreed, nodding. Like you, I use the bow for hunting and carry one as backup when we go on patrol. I think I will always have one with me. A Lakota man without bow and arrows is like the bow without the arrow, or the other way around. He sighed deeply. But in order to defeat the one enemy who now threatens our way of life, all of our fighting men must have guns and plenty of bullets. That is the new reality. The trouble is, we can make bows and as many arrows as we need, but we cannot make guns or bullets. There our enemy has the advantage over us. True, Cloud said, but we are better fighters and better horsemen, and if we all have guns and plenty of bullets, then any one of us is worth several of them. Crazy Horse couldn't agree more. Attitude was the best weapon of all, and men like Cloud, men who had a firm grasp of reality, were the strongest defense the Lakota had. As he and others knew, some, perhaps most, of the Lakota men languishing on the Red Cloud and Spotted Tail agencies felt the same way. He knew it was what Sitting Bull was counting on. I spoke with Yellow Wolf this morning, he said. He is willing to go on a scout to the White Buttes, and Fast Horse will go with him. But I think they should wait. He pointed to the gray sky. The weather women are right again, he said. There is bad weather coming. And that concludes chapter 14.
This program is made possible by funding from the Corporation.